Tango Tango Papa 1898, February 20th, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this afternoon from Bedford, Pennsylvania. So I guess it's been about a week since the last podcast, and where have I been? I was down in the south, I went to Mississippi, and then I was in Mississippi, and then I ended up in Alabama. And back in Mississippi, and then back in Alabama, and then I was in North. Yesterday I was in North Carolina, and it ended up they were threatened with snow, so I left there. And before I got out of North Carolina, I went from North Carolina into Virginia. It did start snowing, and once I got in Virginia, I was in Eastern Virginia, and it was it got to where it was pretty intense. Visibility was pretty limited, and the Interstate 81 was covered with snow, and so I went ahead and stopped can't think of the name of the place. It's exit 101 on Interstate 81. I'll think of it. But anyway, I've stopped there a bunch of times. But anyway, there's a truck stop there that has a Taco Bell in it. So that I stopped there, and the snow stopped sometime in overnight. Stopped coming down, and it kind of cleared off this morning. The sun popped out, but it must have snowed. I'm guessing about maybe 8 or 9 inches there, and. But by the time I left there this morning, they had been working on the roads. The state crews had been working on the roads, and by the time I got out of there, the road was in pretty decent shape. There were a few little icy patches in the left lane as I kind of went along Interstate 81 north, but mostly it was in pretty decent shape. And then after I got farther north, which is really kind of northeast on 81, because 81, it's labeled as north and south, but it sort of also runs east and west, and in some cases it's more east than west than it is north and south. But once I got into the northern part of Virginia, they didn't get as much snow, and maybe they're maybe up around Winchester they might have gotten 2 inches of snow, and a lot of that melted once the sun popped out today. So that's right now. I'm at Bedford, Pennsylvania, waiting for them to unload the load that I have. And so far, I think they got about 2 inches of snow here. And once the sun popped out, most of the snow is gone. I don't know if there's some on the ground already or not, but I'd say most of the snow, that whatever they received, is melting pretty quickly. But except on the landscape, it's going to stay on the landscape for a while. There wasn't as much snow here as Virginia, southern Virginia. I think the state of Tennessee and maybe North Carolina had, I know they declared it like a state of emergency. Because I think Tennessee, when I was eating, there was a television on and they were showing like images of Nashville, and I guess Nashville kind of got a bunch of snow and ice. Some of the vehicles that passed me today, there were a few trucks that I got passed by today that were really ice covered, so don't know where they came from, but obviously they were in some ice, and the ice hadn't, you know, hadn't melted yet. So, but anyway, it's February, and it's, you know, it's going to continue to be winter. You know, just that's just the weather, and the weather is the weather, and that's why we build shelters. I've said a million times, you know, if we were out in the elements all the time, if we tried to be like a, you know, if we tried to live out in the elements all the time, we'd die of exposure. And, you know, so that's why we build shelter, sort of protect ourselves from the environment, because it's always changing. So, anyway, right now, it looks like after I get out of here, the next thing will be, the next load that they have pre-planned, it picks up in, over in Palmyra, which is over by Hershey, just outside of Hershey, over in Harrisburg, Carlisle area, and then that load, will deliver to Edwardsville, Illinois. So in the last podcast, and probably the last number of podcasts, I've been talking about the idea that the world is getting worse. Things are definitely getting worse. There's all kinds of terrible things that are constantly happening, and at this point it's not going to let up, or and certainly not anytime soon. It's happening on individual levels, it's happening on group levels, you know, all kinds of different group levels, local area levels, state levels, certainly national levels, and global levels. And as I say, this is, things do seem to be accelerating. Things are becoming worse. And so there's a lot of people that are really feeling the anxiety and wondering, what can I do about it? You know, and of course, there is nothing that any one of us can do to sort of prevent or stave off or prevent the inevitable. The inevitable is going to happen, whether we like it or not. So all you can really do is really allow that. If you're so inclined, you'll see that, you know, you don't like the way you live, you don't like living with anxiety, and if you're so inclined, then you're already looking for the truth. You're looking for, you know, why, the question, why am I here? Why do I exist? What meaning am I missing? And if you're really looking, you know, seek and ye shall find. So, but if the problem is, a lot of people are looking for kind of, they're sort of looking for temporary fixes. You know, there's all kinds of little temporary fixes that people try to latch on to. And of course, they don't really do anything. They don't really do anything substantive. And of course, the real answer, as I was talking about in the last podcast, you have to have a willingness to allow your creator to, you know, to almost, you know, figuratively speaking, stop and allow your creator, allow your via conscience, or allow your conscience, in other words, to catch up with you. And really allow it to have its way with you. There's a line in the Bible to the effect that you be molded, remolded from your mind from within. I can't really quote it. What does that mean, to be remolded, your mind to be remolded from within? What does that really mean? That means you allow your conscience to catch up with you. You allow whatever that is. You know it as a guilty conscience. It's an identity. And if you can ever make friends with that conscience, then it's no longer a guilty conscience. But then it becomes your friend, and you just end up kind of knowing what to do. You know the difference between right and wrong without anybody having to tell you, or without you having to really think and decide what's right and decide what's wrong. You'll simply know without even knowing how you know. And of course, that's threatening to the wrong side of the ego. The wrong side of the ego always wants to think that it's the smartest, and it's the, you know, or that it's the bee's knees and the cat's meow, and it wants to think that it's smart, the smartest thing in the room, and it's going to figure it out. It's going to roll up. You think you're going to roll up your sleeves and fix yourself, and of course you can't. Not possible. So, but you really do need to allow your creator to catch up with you. And so the anxiety that people are feeling is actually quite a good thing. And you should never, if you start feeling anxiety, you should never try to run away from it, or you know, any kind of anxiety or pain. You should always move towards the pain. You know, whether, especially if it's some sort of a mental pain that's reminding you, it's kind of telling you, embarrassing you, you did something you shouldn't have done. You handled something, you know, in a way you shouldn't have handled it. You behaved in a way that you shouldn't have behaved, etc., etc. And of course, that's threatening, because we all end up having our little pet things that we like to do. You know, and we want to believe that whatever those things are, we know that they're wrong. You know, when it really comes down to brass tacks, we probably know that those things are wrong, or at the very least, they're questionable. But yet, we kind of twist it in our head somehow that it's really okay. You know, it's really okay to, you know, and I love to go to the extreme. It's really okay to kill your baby. You know, it's just so convenient to just, you know, the woman gets pregnant and is not unmarried and just don't want to have it. It's just an encumbrance and et cetera, et cetera. Just terrible inconvenience, and it's just an unwanted tissue mass anyway. It's just a tadpole looking thing. We'll just go to the abortion doctor, and he'll get rid of it for us. You know, and it's so easy to kind of pretend that that's not murder, that you're not murdering a human being. You're just getting rid of an unwanted tissue mass, and the world's going to be a better place for it. And so you have to jump through all kinds of hoops from a conscience standpoint to try to twist that around, and to try to, and then you find slimy friends that will agree with you that it's, you know, abortion's really a good thing, and not, it really is, it's a noble thing. You did such a noble thing by killing that baby. Because it would just have a miserable life anyway. It would, if you wouldn't have murdered it, it would be thanking you. It would be thanking you if you hadn't murdered it. And that's kind of the thought process that goes on. We have no clue what goes on in people's heads, how twisted things become. But you can, you know, you use your imagination a little bit, and it's probably 20 times worse than whatever the worst thing you can imagine, how people twist things in their mind. So that's a dangerous thing to begin to, you know, to twist you know, sort of twist your mind in a pretzel in order to pretend that wrong is right and right is wrong, and then you find people that are pretend with you, and then ultimately you'll try to make it illegal for people to even think, you know, then, you know, even think that what you're doing is wrong, and you know, end up kind of forcing every, you know, trying to force everybody to think the same way, to twist themselves into pretzel thinking in order to try to get, keep conscience at bay and keep guilt, keep the guilt away. That rhymed. So, but it's a dangerous thing. And it's also a dangerous thing to hold on to resentment. I know there are some people that think, oh, I have resentment, and they keep it around like it's a little pet. And, I have it, and, you know, and I can't get rid of it, and I know I have this little problem, and, but then they just, they kind of keep it around, or they even think that they can turn it into something positive, kind of the mothers against drunk driving. You can take your rage and your resentment and make it into something positive, and of course you can't. And it's dangerous to keep, it's dangerous, whether you're aware of resentment, it's buried, or if you're overtly aware of it and you become proud of it, and there are people like that, that are proud of their rage, they're proud of their resentment. They can even have pride marches because, you know, centered around resentment. You know, labor pride is, you know, they resent the fact that they have to work, that they weren't born rich, etc., etc. And so then they have a pride march. Labor Pride March, and there's other kinds of pride marches that are based around resentment. And but the danger of that is that, you know, I don't know, most people I think have watched the Matrix movie, and the Matrix movie, those Matrix, especially the original Matrix movie, was very interesting because it sort of portrayed, of course, you know, it was kind of a fantasy world, but a good fantasy always has some element of truth to it. And they kind of couch it in cartoon terms, and then people are able to accept it. And so, like with Star Wars, you know, you had the cartoon, basically the cartoon Darth Vader character, and the cartoon Anakin Skywalker, and the cartoon Princess Leia, and the cartoon robots, and so, etc., etc. And the idea, you know, and then you have good, you know, story about good versus evil, and then people can kind of accept it because it's kind of far removed from their everyday existence. And so the Matrix has this scene where, you know, and of course there's a lot of chase scenes in the Matrix, but one of the chase scenes, you know, you have these guys are, you know, they go through this small apartment where this elderly woman is in her kitchen cooking. And at any point in the Matrix, any one of the people can sort of morph into one of these government-looking men with the earpiece in their ear. And so this elderly woman is there cooking her, you know, about to cook her dinner or whatever in her little tiny apartment. And all of a sudden a guy, you know, kind of comes in, and as they're going through her apartment to get out, she morphs into one of these government men and starts chasing after them. And in the same way, you know, that really caught my eye because, in the very same way, if you hold on to resentment, whether you're aware of the resentment or not, if you have resentment buried in there, there's another force that has control of you. Whether you like it or not, you may pretend like evil doesn't exist. You may have it twisted in your head, oh, evil doesn't exist, or it's just bad people or whatever. Evil does exist. And if you have resentment, evil has a claim on you. Evil has its mark on you. Evil has control. So there was this article. I guess I should dig out the article. There was this article. This guy, I think he was in Virginia, I believe. I think he was around somewhere in Baltimore, or maybe it was Maryland. It might have been around Baltimore. So anyway, there was this guy, and he was in an apartment complex. And this guy posted that in this one article I read about him. He had all these different Facebook posts about he was an atheist, and he hated any kind of religion. He hated Christianity. He hated Islam. He hated, he just despised any kind of religion or Christianity. And he'd, he'd post long, angry posts. But he was also a pro-gun advocate. And, but he would go on and on and on about these groups of people that he hated. And then at the same time, so what happened? I guess just in the past few days, this guy got, I guess for a while, and I was reading farther in the article, he would have, because he lived in this apartment complex, and he would have all these confrontations with the neighbors about all kinds of different things. And so, and one of the things that he'd confront people would, I'm sure he probably confronted them about noise, but one of the things that he confronted a lot of different people about was parking. They parked in the wrong place. And so he had some, these Muslim neighbors. There were three of them, and I'm sure they had the Muslim dress. I don't know, the kind of the Muslim costumes. But anyway, there were these three Muslim neighbors, and he got into a dispute with them over their parking, and he shot and killed the three neighbors over over a parking dispute at the apartment complex. Now, did that guy plan to do that? No, I don't think he planned to do it. I think that because he was overt about resentment, kind of overt about it. And I think he was proud of it. They've made some fairly extensive quotes of his Facebook page. And it came across to me that he was proud of his rage. He was proud of his resentment. And I think that evil was in charge all along, but then he got into the right emotional state, and evil simply took control. And I'm sure he didn't. He could say, "Well, I don't know what came over me." A lot of people say that. "Well, I don't know what came over me. Why did I do that?" It's because something else was in control all along, and you've been in denial. If you have resentment, something else is in control. Evil is in control. If you have resentment and you think you're going to turn it into something positive, you're deluding yourself. All who sin are what? Slaves. S-L-A-V-E-S. That means exactly what it says. It's absolutely true. Undeniably true. Resentment is a sin. I'm sorry. But it is. I don't care if it makes you feel, for a split second, you feel like you're God. But, of course, that's a lie. That's the lie. It's a lie. You're not God. But you get this little split second lie that you're really God. You're really something. When you're a nothing. A nothing that someone else has the control over. Someone else, that evil is able to just grab you when it wants and pull the trigger. And in this case, he pulled the trigger three times. So part of this article was talking about, was this a hate crime or not? So it might be a hate crime, which the whole hate crime thing has never made any sense to me. Because let's say you murder somebody. They're dead is dead, and then the idea that somehow it's worse if it's a hate crime, if you hated them. Well, how do you, in a sense, every murder is a hate crime, isn't it? It would have to, because that the whole concept of hate crimes doesn't make any sense at all, because in a sense, every murder is a hate crime. How does it get worse than murder? I don't understand. That doesn't compute. So anyway, there's a reason right there to get rid of your resentment, or to at least want to get rid of it. As the heat gets turned up, as it were, And we're in the process, the heat is getting turned up. As the heat is turned up, and the things in the world are, they're getting worse, you're seeing worse and worse things happen at greater and greater frequency. As that heat sort of gets turned up, as it, you know, as the volume of that becomes more, it equates to more pressure, and apply more pressure, and there's going to be more people. You're going to see more and more of this kind of breaking, where people just all of a sudden they go over the edge. You know, they look like normal people and they acted like normal people before, but then all of a sudden they sort of go, they, the, you know, it's like the lid builds up too much pressure and all of a sudden it explodes. But something else is in charge. The malevolent spirit of evil is in charge. But it was all along. It was just hidden. So, there's a real reason to want to give it up. To want to, you know, do you really want to find the truth? Or do you want, you know, this guy that shot these three people, you know, he's no doubt he goes to jail now, you know, and I doubt, you know, if he's in Maryland, he's probably not going to get the death penalty, but there's a really good chance he's going to end up in jail, I'd say, and his life is over, you know, or it's certainly never going to be the same. And I'm sure that he probably wonders what came over him. So it's now, I don't know, a couple of days later, and been pretty busy, staying about as busy as I can be. I just haven't had time to record any more audio or make an audio podcast. So now I am at Prescott, Arkansas at the moment, and I'm delivering tomorrow afternoon. Got to be there at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon to Cleburne, Texas. Cleburne is sort of south of Fort Worth, kind of in the greater, certainly in the greater Fort Worth, Dallas area, Dallas-Fort Worth area, kind of the metropolitan area. I think it would be considered in the area. So anyway, I delivered there tomorrow afternoon. Now, they did have it pre-planned that I would be picking a load up, I guess, in Fort Worth and then take it to Memphis. But I, you know, I just don't have the hours left on my electronic logbook. So they're going to have to come up with something different. And then besides that, now today was the 20th, so we got 21, 22, 23, and I'm due home on the 24th. So hopefully they'll be able to come up with something, but yeah, I'm sure they will. So it's been in, you know, kind of the cold. I've been in the cold, and then actually right now it's the temperature here at Prescott, Arkansas. When I looked a while ago, it was in the 40s. Which, that's actually pretty decent compared to what I've been in the past few days. It's been, well, last night I was at Ozora, Missouri, and it was in single digits. It was, you know, it got down in the single digits. And the night before that, I was at Marshall, Illinois, the night before. And it was below zero there. It was, I don't know, maybe 6 degrees or so below or more below zero. So I've been in, you know, kind of cooler weather. So today it was below freezing a lot of the day, and it was actually raining, part of the time. Fortunately, I don't know, for whatever reason, it wasn't sticking to the road, or didn't seem to be, which that was good. That didn't slow me down at all, or create any other kind of problems. So, anyway, I've probably mentioned it before. I watch, there's this PBS show that's kind of popular, and a lot of people are probably familiar with it. Downton Abbey. And it's been on, you know, this is the fifth season, so it's been on the air for several years. And initially, I kind of became aware of it because my mom, you know, has for years she's watched those types of shows, any kind of masterpiece, British drama type thing, masterpiece theater on PBS. She'd be glued to it. And so she's watched that type of thing for years, and so that's how I initially kind of became aware of it after it was on the air for a couple of years. I actually ended up watching it and decided that I really liked it. And so it's a hit. It's become a big hit series for certainly PBS, and I don't know who the partner is in Britain, if it's BBC, or it might be one of the other networks. But in any case, it's a very popular series. And it's interesting because they have, you know, they've got all these extras, and, you know, if you go to the PBS.com website, they've got all of the, you know, little snippets and, you know, the things to try to get people to, to watch to look at the website and then maybe see some of the ads, watch some of the ads, because they do embed ads when you're watching the videos online. So, one of the things it says, well, they're asking some of the cast members, well, why do you think that Downton Abbey, what is it about Downton Abbey that has really seemed to strike a nerve, and it's, you know, this big international hit. It's not only in Britain, but in the United States, but all over the world. Downton Abbey has become this huge international hit television series. And, you know, they're kind of asking them, well, why do you think that is? And, of course, they come up with, well, it must be the cast, or it must be the crew, and it's Julian Fellowes, the guy that, you know, it's his writing and what have you that makes it so interesting, and people like the different characters, and they like the actors, and it's just a magic mix. Well, I don't, you know, you can take that as far as it goes. I don't think that's it. You know, of course it's good if you have, you know, the really good actors, and you want to do the period costumes and try to, you know, make things look like the period that it's set in, you know, the early 20th century. What you want to do that, certainly, but that's not enough. And it's not, you know, and then people think, well, it's sort of like a soap opera. Not really. And it kind of hit me. What is making it so popular, and what makes it interesting, it's an interesting show to me just to watch, is not because it's a soap opera. I really don't care what happens to this character or what happens to that character. That's not really why I watch it. What is interesting about it, I believe, is because it is a morality play about a family. And there's a difference, you know, it might be a little subtle, but there is a difference between something that's actually a morality play versus something that's just a soap opera. And the thing that kind of makes it a morality play, I don't, you know, is because it's set in the early, very early, you know, turn of the century, and I think now they're supposedly in the you know, getting into the 1920s. What makes it really interesting is, and makes it into kind of a morality play, is the fact that they're trying to make it historically accurate. So when the characters are kind of engaged in, you know, some of the couple of the daughters now are kind of engaged in scandalous stuff, it's about a family that's mostly intact. It's about this intact family, and the main, you know, the mom and the dad, you know, the main two older, you know, the mom and the dad can't step out on each other, and they don't step out on each other, and so they're there, and they're you know, the kind of the core of the family. And then you've got the daughters, and you know, the daughters are kind of, you know, once in a while they kind of engage in bad behavior. One of them has had a child outside of marriage and contemplated an abortion, but then didn't do it. And this type of thing. But nonetheless, people are fascinated by it because basically, you know, they can't really deviate very far from the morals of the time without, you know, they can't really do it because it was the, you know, it was the early 20th century, and you know, this was British high society, and there are certain things that they couldn't do. They just couldn't do that. It would be too big of a scandal, and so they had to, you know, kind of either sweep it under the rug or they had to do something. But the family, there was no such thing as divorce. The family had to remain intact. And I think, you know, and of course people look at this and they, you know, and they think, well, from our point of view, these poor people, they could have, if they would have only just been in the 20th century or the 21st century, then they could just have all the sex that they wanted and have all the abortions that they wanted and do all, you know, whatever kind of sex turned them on and go for it. And that, there wouldn't be a show then. Then it would be a soap opera. So, but I think, you know, one of the fascinating things about Downton Abbey is that there is this moral framework, even though it's, you know, it's just kind of there because of the fact that it was the early 20th century, and they have to kind of remain true to that, as historically accurate as possible, that really helps to set up the conflicts. And that's what makes it so interesting to watch. And you wouldn't, you know, if you tried to do that today, and it wouldn't, you know, you try to set the same family in today's world, and it really wouldn't work as well, because you know, the morals have become so depraved. So, you know, compared to the early 20th century. So it's interesting, you know, even though they were engaging in all of the bad behaviors, or even or contemplating the bad behaviors, it's you know, it's interesting, you know, the conflict between what the moral standards were versus how they kind of handled them, and you know, handled them in the drama. You know, and of course that sets up a perfect conflict, because it's about a family, and it's you know, are they going to do the right thing? And here's and the times sort of defined the right thing to do. You know, people would look at that today and they say, well, you can't be gay, or, you know, because there's this gay character on there and he has to kind of try to keep it hidden, and, you know, that type of thing, and how unfair it is, and compared to, well, if he would have just been, you know, somebody today, they can just be as gay as they want and not have to worry about it. You know, or the same thing with the daughter that's that, you know, ended up getting pregnant and has had the child outside of marriage, and of course the father or the guy that made her pregnant is dead now, and so she's in a real pickle. So, but it's interesting. It's interesting because it is a kind of a morality play. It's not a soap opera. It really isn't. Just, you know, it's got maybe some, you know, people think it's got some soap opera elements, but it really doesn't. What really makes it not a soap opera is the fact that there are moral standards, even if they're just de facto moral standards, because of the moral standards of the time. Then how are they going to resolve that? There's your conflict. You know, you got this family. There's your, and all of them aren't doing the right things. there's the conflict. And so, you know, versus if they could just do whatever they want, then it turns into a soap opera, you know. So anyway, that I thought that was that's interesting, because that really is what has caused it, I think, in large part to be so popular, is the fact that it is a morality play, and it is portraying moral standards, you know. And so there's this conflict between the moral standards versus the behavior of the characters, and how that gets resolved. And that sets up the sort of the perfect drama. It really does. So anyway, so I unload tomorrow at Cleburne, Texas, and then after that we'll see what happens. As I say, I'm due home by the 24th. And so we'll, you know, we'll just have to wait and see if they, you know, what they come up with. They should be able to come up with something, but if they make me burn up the hour too many hours, then I'm not going to be able to get home by the 24th, because over the next, tomorrow I'll get, I don't know, about 6 hours, and that's enough to, you know, more than enough to get me to, from here to Cleburne. So I'll still have a few, maybe a couple, 3 hours left after that. And then I get to the following day, which isn't a whole lot. So that tomorrow's the 21st, 22nd. So it's really the 23rd before I'm going to, you know, get any kind of real time to, you know, to go anywhere. So they'll just have to, they'll take that into account. So I may just end up kind of sitting over the weekend. So, but anyway, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut this off and see if I can get headed to bed. So, anyhow, hope everyone has a great weekend. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.